Welcome, everybody, and happy Thursday afternoon to each and every one of you. I hope your day is going well. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a slate of back-to-back experts to help us understand what's going on in Iran and the Middle East more generally to start us off in this 4 o'clock hour. I'm going to introduce my first guest in just a moment, but to preview what we've got going on for each of you this afternoon, at the half hour mark, so at 4:30 this afternoon, we'll also be joined by Allison McManus. She is the National Security and International Policy Managing Director for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We'll talk about some of the domestic political implications for what's been going on in Iran, including some of the president and Secretary of Defense's attacks on the media over the last few days related to the results of the United States bombing of Iran. At the top of the hour, the 5 o'clock hour, I'm going to be joined by my very good friend and historian Reggie Jackson, coming off of last week's Juneteenth celebration and talking about the new study that has come out as published by Kids Forward here in Wisconsin, as well as the Annie M. Casey Foundation, that looks at racial disparities and how our young people are doing in the state. Reggie's going to join me to understand and better educate us all about some of the historical systemic reasons for some of these disparities that we see here and why they're so much worse in Wisconsin versus our neighboring states, as well as states like Ohio and Pennsylvania. And then to round out the show at 5:30, I've got a question for you, for each and every one of you. Because we're looking at the big, brutal bill. Some indications are that support in the Senate is waning. But does anybody really think that once Donald Trump says it's go time, that the GOP senators won't just line up? So the odds are that the brutal bill will indeed pass. So at 5:30, I want to ask you, are you a beneficiary? Do you receive Badger care or family care? Are you a veteran trying to access services? Do you rely on your Medicare checks? Have you received emergency food assistance in the past or know someone that has? What are you most concerned about in the big, brutal bill? And given that our state's biennial budget is contemplating absolutely draconian cuts to childcare as well as public education, what do you think the future holds for Wisconsinites? You and I will discuss all of that at 5:30. But to kick our show off this afternoon, I'm really excited to be joined by Professor of Political Science from Michigan State University, Russell Lucas. He has an expertise in the Mideast. So welcome to the show, Russell. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me, Maggie.
Well, let's just start off, because the last 48 hours have certainly been an interesting one, as it appears that a classified report was leaked from our military and or intelligence agencies that draws into question Donald Trump as well as Secretary Hegseth's statements that specifically Fordo, this deep underground bunker that's under a mountain and hundreds of feet under that mountain, was, quote, obliterated during the U.S.'s bombing raids against Iran. What do we know about the current status of Fordo, and was it in fact obliterated? What do we know, Russell?
Well, that's a good question. Right. There is a lot of information running around. Before the U.S. actually bombed, it was going to be very difficult for the United States to totally obliterate Fordo. And even with the use of multiple bunker buster bombs, they were going to have to be incredibly accurate and some luck involved for the facility to be totally obliterated, in the president's words. It is, you know, quite likely that the facility was severely damaged. And we've seen, in addition to the U.S. reports that the Defense Intelligence Agency leaked report said that, you know, it damage was moderate and that Iran's facility there probably could be back up and running in maybe a few months. To kind of now the kind of more reports coming from the Secretary of Defense and the Joint Chiefs of Staff that saying the damage was much more significant. But on top of that, we also do have the one of the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Administration, directors reporting in the French media that there was quite a significant damage in Fordow. So, you know, we're probably at the mercy of reports coming out of the government, either official or leaked, to actually know, because the Iranians aren't going to tell anybody. So it's, you know, but the damage is there, but is it completely obliterated? Probably not. And that was going to be highly unlikely without the use of actually with conventional weapons.
And this brings me to my next question, which was ostensibly the justification or the rationale behind engaging in these near warlike acts or war acts, depending on which attorney you may be talking to or which official you may be talking to. It had generally been understood, at least by my readings, that it would take waves of bombing, longer extended bombing raids to completely ensure that Fordow as well as these other sites were destroyed. In other words, the initial rationale was, hey, Iran is weakened. Israel's been bombing Iran. They're further weakened. Now is the opportunity to materially set back Iran's nuclear program. If the estimates from at least the U.S. intelligence agencies prior to our airstrikes were that Iran was perhaps 3 months away from having a usable nuclear weapon, and now that's somewhere in the ballpark of 6 months, I think the big picture question is, was this worth it? What are you seeing, Russell, as a political scientist and looking at the region generally, not to make the political calculus here domestically, but just regionally, does this materially alter the relationships between these critical actors in the Mideast? Does it help or hurt our relationship with Israel? Presumably it helps. But given Jordan, Qatar, tell us, what does this change how these crucial actors in the Mideast, their power arrangements?
I think, you know, it does and it doesn't. That's so I think
spoken for, like a lawyer, Russell.
Well, I think what it is I think the, you know, for Israel, it was taking advantage of the fact that throughout the war with Gaza and then with Iran's proxies in Gaza and then also Hezbollah in Lebanon, that those allies and proxies had been severely weakened over the past couple of years, and that Iran itself had engaged with, you know, drone and missile fire with Israel. Israel took advantage of the fact that, of number one, Iran's ability to respond through proxies was severely weakened in order to kind of push back Iran's nuclear capabilities, for which Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has been arguing against for probably the past 30 years, since he was an ambassador in Washington, D.C. in the 1990s, and certainly since he's been prime minister. He's been trying to convince the U.S. to join in on a military attack to push Iran back, and was very unhappy with the Obama administration's Iran nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. When President Trump in 2018 withdrew from that, there wasn't any plan as to how to stop Iran's nuclear ambitions. But we also have to keep in mind that Iran's nuclear ambitions are assumed, that Iran has been essentially 3 to 5 years away from making a nuclear weapon since the 1980s. Their engineers aren't that bad. It's a political calculation. And so, you know, Iran, if it wanted a nuclear weapon, could have had one a long time ago. It was using that strategic ambiguity of whether it's going to be able to have one, it has one or not, that, you know, and then trying to play that in the JCPOA, Iran was getting sanctions relief in return for kind of pushing back the nuclear program. Now, in the past 2 years, Iran's been definitely weakened, and this attack certainly does weaken Iran. Whether Iran has those nuclear capabilities that it was able to take the enriched uranium that was, you know, at 60%, and then they still have the facilities to upgrade that to weapon grade to at least have the makings for one bomb, you know, we don't know. But it's quite likely that they could have. And the Iranians probably distributed their materials across different sites. They, you know, were probably, since the international monitoring was less rigorous than it had been under the JCPOA, it was probably able to hide things more. And certainly after trading missile fire over the past year or so with Israel, they probably had to assume that there might be an attack on the nuclear facilities that has materialized.
If I could just ask a brief follow-up question, you talk about Iran's use of strategic ambiguity to increase effectively bargaining power with whether it's the United States or Israel or other Mideast actors. I think importantly, at least the initial report that was leaked from the Defense Intelligence Agency indicates, as you were saying, Professor, that Iran retains control of most, if not all, of its nuclear material, that it was moved, that it's going to retain the ability to build a nuclear weapon, and that in that, I sort of asked this question. Donald Trump said today, and I think, Jacob, we've got this sound, he said something very interesting because they're scheduled, the United States and Iran are scheduled to meet again in short order here. But let's take a listen to what the president had to say about that meeting and about trying. No, we do not have enough time for it. He's telling me we have it. We'll do that on the other side. But you can see where I'm going with this.
Sure.
If Iran's leverage was in part created through strategic ambiguity, and we remain in an ambiguous place as to how long and how much material and at what grade it is, does this really improve the United States' bargaining position with Iran?
So very quickly, I'm not sure. I don't think so.
I'm not sure and I don't think so. We'll take a little bit of a breath here. We're going to come back, listen to what the president had to say. We'll continue our discussion with Professor Russell Lucas of the University of Michigan State University, lest I
go
get
green.
Those two confused. Yikes. Keep listening. We're going to discuss what this means for you and what we might be expecting, next in these U.S.-Iranian negotiations. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.